This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined in studio by Ellison Wiest. Hello, Ellison.
Hello. It's a wonderful day.
It is. It's always a wonderful day when I get to talk books with you.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, yes. And we talked books a little bit the last time we saw each other on Christmas Day.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was
you came
wonderful.
And joined our family for dinner because your beloved husband Carl was on the East Coast with family, taking care of some ailing family who I hope are better now.
Well, one out of two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So
okay.
We're good to go.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. I really appreciated it and had such a good time.
Oh, good. We had such a good time. It made the, you know, we don't have family out here and it made it just feel like a much, much more special occasion. So thank you for joining us. Yeah. Yeah, and I was so impressed that you knew the memoir that Phoebe is reading. You asked my older daughter what book she is reading. Yeah,
Say Your Name by Chanel Miller. And I was going to mention that because if I had $10 for everybody, including your oldest, who has recommended that I read that, I'd be able to take us on a spa day. I mean, literally,
I should have started collecting, Ellison.
Yeah, I should have.
Next time.
I was walking Babylon the other day and saw a neighbor across the street, a two-lane across Alberta, so a busy ride, and she's shouting at me, have you read Say My Name?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, so our first book recommendation.
That's exactly
sort
right.
Sort of courtesy of Phoebe in a way.
Yes.
So New Year's resolution, intentions, anything?
I am very careful about New Year's resolutions because I find that they don't work. But one of the things that I want to keep doing is and writing to my grandchildren.
Aww.
My mother started writing me weekly letters when I went to college. And she wrote me a weekly letter right up until about 3 weeks before she passed.
Oh.
And now I write a weekly letter to my father and my mother-in-law. But my grandchildren seem to like it if I write in the voice of Babylon.
Your dog.
So that's the way I'm able to.
I see a book coming.
That's right. They get very excited, particularly the 4.5-year-old. His mother says his eyes get very big. So I think probably to do that, you know, Carol's generation, my daughter's generation's really not into.
Oh, she wouldn't. It wouldn't mean anything to her. I mean, it would mean something, but it wouldn't be that special to her.
She always says the only time she really wants a letter is when things aren't going well for her and she needs some rah-rah.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Because Phoebe, my older daughter, and I were at Powell's, actually, when she got that Chanel Miller book. And I just love that Powell's, as some people might know, is the city of books here in Portland. And that I love their stationery and note card section.
Right.
And so there's these really cute little ones. And I was like, oh, they're kind of small. And when I send a note to my mom, I like it to be bigger so that I don't have to write really tiny. And I like it to be a very bright, easy to see design on it. So this one, they were smaller and it was kind of finely detailed. It was kind of these little woodland scenes. And Phoebe goes, oh, I love it. You can get those and write to me when I'm off at college.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay,
done. Good.
So, yeah. So yeah. Because I have written, the only time that I've written to my kids are when they've gone off to camp. And
I did write to Carol when she was in college because, you know, she was back in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But it was I rarely got anything back except, you know, cards on Mother's Day, birthday, you know, that sort of thing.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, so that's intriguing. So that's your intention then to write to your grandkids on a weekly basis?
No, I don't think I'm going to go weekly with them. I think I'm probably going to try to do at least once a month, maybe two.
Okay, because my intention for January, I do not have any resolutions, is to, and I decided this while I was standing outside of Molly's house waiting for her to poop before we went on a run.
Thank you, Molly.
That I'm going to write a letter or a postcard to a friend or family member every day in January.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Including, and then the caveat is including my mother twice a week.
Great.
So yes. Great.
I know she will appreciate that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So I am an avid letter. I think in this day and age, I can clarify that I qualify as a avid letter writer. And I'm not looking to get letters back, although on occasion I do, including a friend from college who wrote me back. She's like, I guess this means we're pen pals now. And I'm like, oh, Meg, I love you.
Yeah, so, people really appreciate letters.
Oh, I love getting a
call. So do I.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So do I.
Yeah. So, and I do on occasion write to, I think I've written you a card.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Right, so. Yes, you have. Which, you know, right now I'm sitting in just the miasma of Presbyterian guilt because I realize I did not write you a thank you note for Christmas dinner.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's,
no,
hurry up.
No.
We got
I can still make the post today.
That's right.
Yeah. So I have, and also the, so part of it is because when my mother moved from my childhood home, her long 50 plus year home, into the facility where she lives now, the apartment that she lives is, I laid claim to her desk and our slant top desk. And so that's in the corner of our living room, and it has a portrait of her, a photo that I believe is maybe one of her college yearbook photos something. And then there's a couple other family images right there. And I had not yet used it, even though I'd had it close to a year. And so on New Year's Day, I kind of moved into the desk and took all my stationery and note cards and all that stuff and organized it and put it in, you know, little things like one drawer is for art cards. Another one is for flower related cards. You sense a theme. And so then I sit very deliberately and intentionally sit down at the desk and, and write the little correspondence for the day.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So, and you know, the scene I often envision is from Rebecca, the Daphne du Maurier novel. And in the, who is that, Olivia de Havilland who's in that?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. And, so when she goes and writes her correspondence in the morning room.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's from the movie. So, but I have read the book, I think, at least once, if not
wonderful.
Twice. It is. Oh, I love Daphne du Maurier.
Yeah. I liked some of her short stories. I still have not found one of her novels. I'm trying to remember the two other novels that I read of hers. But anyway, Rebecca is just delightful.
It's fantastic.
And she's got a group of short stories called Don't Look Now.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That was put out by the New York Review of Books. And it's wonderful, too.
And that was turned into a movie with Donald Sutherland.
That mm-hmm. particular story was. That movie is creepy.
Yeah. I'd like to also say it's really a good harbinger for this podcast. Because I am just I'm remembering first names, last names.
That's right. Let's hope it keeps up.
Yes, yes.
That I don't get sidetracked by my thank you note.
Be here now.
That's right.
Okay, so before you and I talk about the books we read, we're going to bring on Alex Ward, our podcast producer, into the conversation. But before that, we're going to take a quick break. You'll want to stay with us. Alex, we finally get you on a mic, so welcome to the show.
Yeah, I don't even have my own mic. I'm just like Paul and George here sharing this mic. Paul and George? Oh, yeah, they did used to share a mic with the Beatles because John had his own mic, right?
Yeah, I guess that makes me Ringo, yeah. I guess.
No?
I don't have visuals of the Beatles.
Talking like 66, 65, touring live.
Anyway,
I like the Beatles.
Yeah, okay. All right. So one of the reasons I'm having you talk is because when we were recording a recent episode, you said you just had purchased a Kindle. And then, so I wanted to hear your thoughts about a Kindle, and Allison has some specific thoughts about her experience with a Kindle. And then you also told me that you have a book recommendation. So we're sharing a mic, so you take it away now, Alex.
Okay, so you were just wanting to know why I got a Kindle?
Yes.
Well, I was hoping to get one for Christmas and didn't, so I had to buy myself one. But, you know, that's how it goes. No, I've had two friends who read a ton. Got one, and they just absolutely were raving about it. They're both around my age. I'm 31. One of them is a history teacher, so he's just constantly reading like a lot of history books, and my other friend really likes fantasy series. And both of them super highly recommended it to me, and I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling for work this year. So honestly, like the logistics of being able to just have a small, slim thing that can like fit into a carry-on luggage is really appealing to me, that I can have a lot of different books rather than carrying the weight around. So a lot of it has to do with that, of just
practicality.
I'm going to be moving around a lot. I'm going to be, you know, in and out of bags, you know, I think all year, just looking at my calendar. So a lot of it had to do with that. And then my other friend, the one who's really into fantasy series, he really likes it for how immersive he gets in the book. And he's like, I just was talking to him yesterday, and he really recommended, he's like, match the light of like whatever you're reading with whatever's going on around you. Like he says, reading in really dark, low light places, you don't have to turn a light on, you know, when you're reading, or have a and especially if you have a partner or girlfriend like I do, like you don't, sometimes you just don't have a light on while they're trying to sleep.
That's very thoughtful of you.
Thank you. So, but for him, it was all about the immersive aspect of having a Kindle, of being able to like really be dark and really be enveloped in something, and sort of like, I don't know, that he, that really
drew, I can particularly see that for fantasy. That would be,
yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and
but, so what was your experience also?
I have resisted, and bought one when they were one of those big Amazon day sales or something, and lasted 24 hours. It was the physicality of it. I just could not do it. Yeah. I had almost a like visceral reaction to it. And I have friends as well that just go on and on, and they say, particularly if you read a lot of books, but my reaction was just almost sort of a gut job. And so you know, I fooled around with it for about a half a day, and then essentially packed it up and sent it back.
Wow. All right. Okay. So that's your take on the Kindle, Alex. Now your book recommendation.
Well, I should say too, I don't have like, the Kindle will be at my doorstep when I get home from this recording.
Oh.
So it's like, yeah. I haven't actually used it. So I was like, I need to come back on the next reading podcast and give you a report.
That's exactly right.
Because I'm not the most voracious reader, but I'm a somewhat steady. I'm just I pick through things. I take my time with it. So anyway, I'll let you know how it goes. The other thing I like, apparently, is you can press and like hold a word and it gives you the definition as you're going.
That's right. Like the New York Times
app. Yeah. So that'll be good for me. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have to be at another screen to look up a word while I'm reading. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm excited for it. Anyway, real quick, my only book recommendation, my favorite book I read this year. I don't know how much of a crossover it is with the Mother Running audience, but it's called Boomtown by Sam Anderson. And it's basically a history of Oklahoma City, but kind of told through the lens of their basketball team, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm a massive basketball nerd. I love everything about basketball. And this book is masquerading as a sports book, but it's not. It's a history book about Oklahoma City and sort of the American obsession with a boom, with suddenly becoming big and growing and tons of money. Like it's the whole city is basically that feeling, that idea. And I had no idea about Oklahoma City or really anything about Oklahoma aside from some like Native American history books I've read that deal with that area.
And how current does it go to? Does it go into the bombing?
I have about an eighth of it left, so it might. Okay. My suspicion is that it will. But it's funny that how many different things have fallen under the like title of Boomtown. Yeah. That's a lot.
Well, and I have to say that Oklahoma City is one place that I've really been wanting to go to for their Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon. So I like checking off boxes of new cities and states for AMR to go to, and Oklahoma and OKC in particular is high on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've just learned so many things about that town that are fascinating to me. And then, I mean, there's like the sports side of it, which I like too, but really even that is, can be traced to so many parts of its DNA as the history of this city and of basically what is in the middle of America, this just patch of land that was one of the last to be settled in the whole country. I mean, that's just a teaser for the book, because I had no idea. Oklahoma City was founded in a single day and they did this thing called the land rush.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there was all the unassigned land, and like they literally blew a bugle horn at noon, and people just rushed
ran.
And
ran.
Claimed.
They ran.
They ran, and they claimed land, and Oklahoma City was done. Like yep. done. Mm-hmm. So it's just a fascinating book, the history of the Sonic Boom program in the 70s that they volunteered to host. I mean, it's just it's really awesome. It's great. Anyway.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Not sure why after you told me before we got on that I don't need to worry about turning my back to you and all this stuff, but yet while you were talking I felt like I needed to like look at you and be like, "Oh, uh-huh." Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I could have just been like
my coffee breath. Yeah. That was terrible.
It's funny I noticed it. And I adore coffee breath. I can't stand coffee, but I adore coffee
gosh.
Breath.
Wow, that's weird.
That is weird. That is weird.
It's not going to happen, but I love kissing a man after he's drank coffee. So
really? Okay,
yeah.
Thank God I'm here to chaperone.
yes, my husband. But I mean, before that, you know, I'm not saying it's just that it was Jack that I liked. Like, and when I was available, any man, you know, so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that too much? Is
I'm
that
just thinking maybe you can put it on one of your t-shirts. I adore coffee breath.
Just lurking at Starbucks when you were single.
That's what I should have done. All right, E, back to you and me.
That's right.
I'm going to turn my back on Alex and his coffee breath. So, let's talk about the first two books are ones that we both read.
Right.
And we got a lead with The
Dutch House.
Oh,
gosh.
So amazing. By Ann Patchett.
Yeah. And I think it actually probably was, if not my favorite book, definitely one of my favorite. In fact, I think it was. She's done it again. And, you know, her last book, Commonwealth, I enjoyed, but I really thought she hit it out of the park with The Dutch House.
Oh, my gosh. I completely agree. Commonwealth was well done.
Yes.
But it actually seemed to me a little bit like a TV program on HBO or something. It reminded me in the Commonwealth just a little bit of The Sopranos or Mad Men. It just had that kind of vintage quality, and it didn't really grab me the way The Dutch House just, I mean, I just poured into that book. I read it in a weekend, even though how many pages is it?
Let's see. And start talking about the cover.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So it is also the most lovely book. Its cover features one of the characters in the book, a young woman, and she's wearing a red coat, and it's in front of, she's sitting in the Dutch house in front of a wallpaper with birds and flowers on it with a kind of Chinese porcelain next to her. And we were talking about this before we came on the air. They had that painting done for the cover of the
right.
book.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I wish there was a way to get it in a poster.
Yeah.
Because I would pay good money for that.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's 335 pages. So, yeah, reading it, I think I read it in about 3 days, which
just hour upon hour upon hour. And it was, yes, and those are my cats, and they are playing. Uh huh. Leo and Pablo. No animals were harmed during the recording of
this
podcast.
That's right.
This episode is wild.
Oh, here we go again.
Switching
mics. Oh, my goodness. Jeez. Doing the little bunny kicks on each other. Yes. So you do a little plot synopsis of it.
It's essentially about a brother and sister. It really focuses around the brother and sister who have grown up with their father in this gorgeous house, this mm-hmm. just tremendous house on a tremendous piece of property, and that's the Dutch house.
Out on the Pennsylvania main line.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And their father, they're led to believe that their mother has died.
Mm-hmm.
And their father remarries a woman who essentially has her eyes first and foremost on the Dutch house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to give too much away except to say that things do not go well down the line. The father dies, mm-hmm. and essentially the brother and the sister are
get shown the door.
Ousted.
Literally,
yes.
Get shown the door.
Literally. And so it kind of follows them as they go through life, the choices that they make, the closeness that mm-hmm. they have. have, and ever always in the background is the Dutch house.
Right. Or parked across, they are parked across the street in a beaten up car, looking at it, talking about it. And the Dutch house itself becomes such a character.
It is.
And I mean, I think we should all have a contest that we all draw our own version of the Dutch house. And,
yeah. Or find it in a magazine or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I like, how about we could do a collage? Yes. Like, you know, so this is, you know.
yeah. Because I have, you know, everybody has their version, you know.
That would actually be super fun. Yeah. Get a couple, like, you know, shelter magazines and cut out some pictures.
Yeah, our architectural or traditional home, I think, would be a good one. Yeah.
Maybe Southern Living. Yeah. We could borrow a couple things from there. So it also, it reminded me a little bit in that sense of the Forsyth saga, the house that Soames moves into at the end, because it is not so much mid-century modern, but it has kind of some classic elements, but also some modern elements to it.
It's a beautiful story.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does focus on those three characters.
Yes. And we should remind people, Ann Patchett also is the genius writer behind Bel Canto.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She's just marvelous.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. So the next book that we both read, I think we're a little divided on.
I think we probably are.
Yeah. So it's Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson.
Yes.
It's been getting a lot of play. I mean, the New York Times did almost literal backflips on the page, the reviewer.
Right.
And so I was, I just have to read it. And so it is a story, and I guess so the spoilers is that I did not love it all that much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I was not doing backflips over it.
Well, I thought it was very quirky, and sometimes quirky,
that's a good word for it,
can be manhandled or kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find this way. I thought it was sort of a dash of Karen Russell, you know, who wrote Vampires in the Lemon Grove. And, of course, her book of short stories, I love this title, is St. Lucy's Home for Girls Raised by Wolves. But I thought it was sort of a dash of her with Maria Semple. Because I don't like full-on weird for weird's sake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Quirky is an excellent adjective for it. So it is focused on Lillian is the protagonist in it, and she was friends for a year with Madison at a prestigious boarding school for girls in Tennessee, in the mountains of Tennessee. And so that was a number of years, I don't know, 10 years ago, something on 10, 15 years ago. And they've remained friends through writing, should say. They have a epistolary relationship.
They do.
And so that then Madison kind of out of the blue asks Lillian, who is really kind of going nowhere in life, to come take care of Madison's stepchildren, who are boy and girl twins, who have a unique characteristic in which they catch fire, spontaneously combust, when they get agitated or overly excited. My piece with it was that I just felt the writing wasn't as, the actual use of words were not as beautiful and lyrical as I typically like.
Okay.
That's one of the many things I liked about the Dutch house, is that sometimes it's like, what a beautiful passage that is. And so the descriptors are so evocative, you know, the way I could really see that house. And there was a house played a big part in Nothing to See Here as well. And it just wasn't, I guess the picture didn't feel as fully painted as figuratively speaking, as it is in some other novels.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that probably that didn't bother me as much, mainly because I focused so much on the characters.
Mm-hmm.
There were really no redeeming characters in this book. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hard feat to pull off. To keep, you know, I think I've talked about this before, where sometimes, you know, you have no redeeming characters and you're just like, it's like somebody took all the air out of you. Mm-hmm. And other times they're either so hilarious or so well conceived that it just adds to it. And that's what it did for me. So, So we kind of split on that.
Yeah. It was, so I think part of it was I had gone in with such high expectations.
Right.
And so, I mean, he's a very gifted writer for sure.
Yes.
But, and, a clever, very clever, but it just, didn't quite carry it for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you had raved about the one book, the Such a Fun Age.
Yeah, now Such a Fun Age is the first book that I read this year, and it's a debut by Kylie Reed, and I thought the first 100-150 pages were fantastic. Then it began to lose a little steam for me. But essentially, it's got a great storyline. The characters are very well captured. It's the story of a young African-American woman, Amira, who is in Philadelphia. Again, we got Philadelphia. Uh-huh. And she part-time babysits for a upper middle-class white couple. And early on in the book, through certain circumstances, Amira and their oldest daughter are at a very ritzy grocery store late mm-hmm. at night. Mm-hmm. And she is accused by the security guard who's been tipped off by an older white woman that they think that she's kidnapped this child. Because she's out late, you know.
Because that's what you do when you kidnap a child, is you take them to Whole Foods, for sure.
Exactly, and look in the peanut section. But so that sort of sets the tone for what's going on, because you have her reaction and how it kind of involves her and going through the story. But then you also have the reaction of the couple, in particular the woman, mm-hmm. The mother. And... the storyline, I think, like I said, the storyline's really good. I think this would be a fantastic book club read, and I think it will hit a number of them. Mm-hmm. I think it'll also appeal to people who enjoyed The Farm by Joanne Ramos.
Yeah, which was on our last show, and I really enjoyed that.
Right, and then I think it's a book that I've spoken of, The Queen of Hearts by Kimmery Martin, and that is Kimmery, K-I-M-M-E-R-Y. That I would have to say, like, the last fourth of it, I thought, and I'm sort of picky about my endings, so mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that's probably more on me than on
I'd
the
like
author.
To say that I think a great ending can sometimes save a mediocre book.
Yes, I agree.
And I also love nothing more than a kicker ending.
Yeah.
Oh boy, love that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and she's got some kickers. The book is divided into, I believe, it's either, four parts. And she's got some good kickers, like the kicker to the end of the first part is fascinating. So
good.
I will say that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got some kickers.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's what I kicked off the year with. You were talking about great writing and Ann Patchett, and I have to mention a book of short stories called Exhalation by Ted Chiang. Mm-hmm. And that's C-H-I-A-N-G. And Adrian, this one's for you because it's...
like Casey Kasem. Yeah,
that's exactly right. It's sci-fi. Oh, and as you know, despite Adrian's best, you know, sci-fi is a hard nut to crack for me. So, but I kept reading and kept reading people raving about it. It's short stories and one, which is definitely a novella. I think it's like over 100 pages. Oh. But... the writing is amazing. The storylines are great, but the writing is so intelligent and so, I can't think of enough adjectives to really, explain it, but it's just beautifully done. And every story I kept thinking, okay, this next story I'm not going to enjoy. this one's going to be too out there. Uh-huh. Oh, no, just...
Each one after another.
Yes, I would have to say that I enjoyed each one of them. Some obviously more than others, but just fantastic. So I really, really would, I'm interested to read more. I think this is his second collection. So, and I think the first one was like 10 years ago. So I'm going to go back and look for it.
Oh, he's a Donna Tartt takes a decade.
Yes, he is. Uh-huh. And then I don't know if you've read Olive Again. By Elizabeth Strout?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. I don't know if you, but I liked it. I know that a lot of people were disappointed by it. And then I've been amused because I've read so many people that, didn't like Olive herself, which I'm like, I don't think we're supposed to like Olive Kittredge.
I did not like Olive Kittredge, the book.
Okay.
Yeah, I read from book group. I did not enjoy it.
Okay,
yeah.
I did. I just did. And I mean, I thought the HBO series was done well, but I just love that character. And I thought Olive Again was very well handled as far as we, moving forward in her life. And I was really sad to come to the end.
Oh, all right. So, and remind people that is, say that it's by Elizabeth
Strout.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And you have any other books?
I do. Nonfiction. There's one in particular I want to talk about, and that's No Visible Bruises.
Oh.
What We Don't Know About Domestic Violence Can Kill Us. Mm. It's by Rachel Louise Snyder. Mm-hmm. Really hit a number of top 10, top 5 lists, including the New York Times. But this is a book that I think, regardless of where you are in life, regardless of whether you have ever known anyone who's experienced it or you yourself has, you have to read. Because I kind of thought that given some people that I've known in my life, that I knew everything there was to know about domestic violence. I mean, not everything, but I had a good grip on it. And early on in the book, Snyder showed me that I did not. This is not a, you know, blow by blow on, you know, it's not where she keeps bringing up different stories. She essentially mainly follows one particular woman, and there are others. But the one thing that I found fascinating is that so many things that we've thought help domestic violence victims doesn't. So many things that we've thought would prevent further domestic violence didn't or don't work. And so it was just fascinating and horrifying for me. But I really urge everybody to read this book.
Well, that sounds like another book that would be a great book group read.
I think it really would. Mm-hmm. I think, and here I'm going to misquote, I know, but I believe she says early on that if you take all the people that were killed in the Iraq conflict, it barely makes how many women are killed, like over 1 year period or something in domestic. It's just horrifying.
Right.
It's horrifying.
Right. And we definitely need to get a conversation going more vigorously in this country. So I think by having more people read it, and then talk with their friends and neighbors and family members.
I think so. I really do. And I mean, let's switch it up here. If this many men were being killed by women.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, that's, let's not overstate the obvious. That's. Also read Catch and Kill, which I think you're thinking about reading by Ronan Farrow.
I listened to the podcast.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, is the podcast over, do we think?
Gosh, I don't.
A new episode hasn't come out.
I don't know. I listened to like the first two, but it was kind of redundant for me.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's timely that we're talking about that with Harvey Weinstein's trial underway. But here's another one that I have to use the word horrify, because it's not only just what he did, but the people and the entities that essentially abetted him and covered up for him. And that's the one thing that I'll say this book really nails. Farrow sometimes gets in the way of the book a little bit, and he even says, you know, I think he has a tendency to insert himself. But it, of course, in this case, he turned out to be part of the issue.
He certainly did.
So, but, you know, wasn't like just, I wasn't as fascinated by it as I was by No Visible Bruises. And that may have been just some of the writing style for me. But still, I think that, you know, I think it's a good book.
And did you follow, you had followed a lot of it. I mean, so did you feel like a lot of it was rehashing of stuff you already knew?
No. If anything, I think it brought up some things that I really didn't, as far as when we talk about the NBC portion of it and what he went through in that regard. And, you know, I knew some of it from the Times, reading the Times. But no, I think, you know.
Okay. All right. Any other nonfictions?
None that I'd really, you know, care to talk about. Maybe. How's that for?
So, and how about books that you're looking forward to reading?
You know, the number one that I'm looking
for. Is it the same one that I'm looking forward to? Yes. So that you told me about on Christmas. It was like a Christmas gift for you to tell me about it. Go ahead, say it.
It's Everybody Rejoice. Emily St. John Mandel has a new novel coming out March 24th, and it's called The Glass Hotel. And it's on, I think, every list that I've seen of books we're looking forward to in 2020. It is not dystopia. It's essentially...
Remind people what her debut novel was.
It wasn't debut. Her last novel that we all love so much was Station 11.
Yes.
And you know, my husband said, is this new one Station 12? Ha ha. But Station 11, another dystopian novel that I could not get out of my head. And again, I am not big on dystopia.
I know. Well, see, I love dystopian stuff.
You do. That's
I
right.
love no, dystopian that's novels. Right. And I mean, I think about that novel when I go to airports.
Yep.
And, you know, yep. and just, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Big fan of dystopia.
Yeah, oh, well, you right. if you've read Station 11, haven't you, Alec?
Oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah. You have to read it.
Yeah. The last one I read, like, that was Blindness, which I loved.
Oh, well, you've got to read this one. All right. So it's, this one is, The Glass Hotels sounds fantastic because it's about greed and guilt, and it's centered around great wealth and a Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a love story angle as well. So that comes out again March 24th. I am just like... chomping at the bit.
Yes. I already put myself on the hold list. I'm sure you're ahead of me on the hold list at Multnomah County Library.
Probably. Yeah.
Thankfully, there were not a ton of people already on it.
And then we've been talking about Ann Patchett, and she is really talking about a book that comes out in 2 weeks, so we don't have to wait too long. It's called American Dirt by Janine Cummins. And this one's about a family, a Mexican family living in Acapulco. The wife, Lydia, runs a bookstore. The husband is a journalist, and they have an adorable 10-year-old son. One day, this charming man comes into Lydia's store, and he ends up buying two sort of very unknown books that happen to be Lydia's favorites, and they begin a conversation. She finds him charming. Mm. What she doesn't know is he's the jefe of a very large, dangerous drug cartel.
Oh.
Now, then her husband is working on a tell-all which about this same jefe, which, after it's published, puts the family in great danger.
Oh.
And so I'll leave it at that, but it's getting, it is another book that's on everybody's.
I'd like to also say that jefe is the second new word of that I've learned in 2020.
Oh,
I did not know. Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah. Whenever I say it, I always want to drop my voice down.
Well, I'm impressed. I would not have expected to learn that word from you, Ellison. And I will say the other word that I learned is kickback.
Yes.
For a small casual gathering that is not a party.
Oh, no, I didn't know that one. I'd always used it like I'm giving you a kickback here.
Right. Yeah. That happens in politics or something. Yeah. Yes. No, yeah. Kickback is, so my kids, two of the three kids went to gatherings on New Year's Eve. And I learned from my older daughter's boyfriend that when I said, oh, and it's not a party, right? And I said, well, what should I call it? And he immediately goes, a kickback.
So
then I like repeated it to myself, and I was all intrigued. And so I told Molly about it while I was trying. She goes, oh, please, that term's going out the door like that.
Oh.
And she's known it for years. Because I said, do you know what the word kickback means? She goes, yeah, a casual gathering. I was like, why didn't you tell me?
So not having teenage kids in the house.
So jefe and kickback.
Yay.
So,
the jefe turned up at the kickback.
Right. And it suddenly became a gala.
Yeah.
A bacchanalia, maybe.
Yeah.
So one book that I need to read that has been by my bedside for ever since it came out is The Testaments.
Oh, yes.
The sequel to Handmaid's Tale. So you haven't read it yet either?
No. In fact, I reread The Handmaid's Tale because the last time I read it was about a year after it came out, you know, in the late 80s. So I read that again, and The Testament is in my bookcase also.
Yeah. So I have it. So again, by Margaret Atwood, a sequel to Handmaid's Tale. And the reason I haven't read it is because I loved Handmaid's Tale so much that as long as I don't start The Testaments, it will always be out there to read. It's the same thing with the final two episodes of Fleabag.
Oh.
I haven't watched them yet because I don't want to be over.
Yeah.
And as long as I don't watch it, it's not over.
It's not over. That's
so
good.
So for Fleabag, I just keep rewatching the first four episodes of season two.
Okay.
I've probably watched those four times each.
Oh my goodness. So
I did. I finally thought, I think there's probably a spoiler somewhere, and I've so far dodged it, but
right.
I doubt I will be able to keep.
Right.
So I think I might rewatch season two all over again and then go through to the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all but right. same Good thing with you. Testament. So,
brave.
And I did the same thing with Buffy the Vampire Slayer way back when, that I kept the finale on the series finale on DVR forever for like 2.5 months.
Oh my goodness.
Because as long as I didn't watch it, Buffy and her, you know, her Scooby gang was still in existence.
Gosh. Well, let me know when you watch the last two. I'll know not to contact you for several days when you're in mourning. Well, I've got another one that really surprised me. I just found out about it yesterday. This is for Curtis Sittenfeld fans.
Oh, yes. I just learned about that, too.
Did you hear about it?
Yes. Rodham.
Yeah, Rodham.
Yes.
And essentially, it's about what would have happened if Hillary Rodham had turned Bill Clinton down.
Yes.
But this exasperating thing is there's no release date for it. So I am thinking it's probably going to be fall of 2020.
And I have to tell you, well, first of all, I feel really in the know that I learned about it on the same day that you did. Like, I am just sitting up a little taller in my chair.
I noticed that.
And so that I Googled around a bit because
I was so
interested in finding out a release date. But did you come across news stories that talked about that she was writing it in October of 2017?
Oh,
so I'm
okay.
Like, oh, this is a long time coming, which on the one hand, you think, cool, it'll be out soon. No, to me, that says that, you know, because she's come out with another book in between.
Yeah, short stories.
Yeah.
The title of which escapes me, but that was her last book of short stories.
Yeah,
I wonder if there's a lot of vetting, if there's been a lot of, I mean, I don't know, you know, she did a similar one on...
Laura Bush. Yeah.
So
the first wife,
I don't know.
Right? Was what was it?
Well, maybe it was the first wife.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
We can look it up. Or yeah. Alex, could you please look that up, please? Yeah.
Yeah, just look up. Curtis Sittenfeld, and it's, in fact, I can probably look it up.
No, I can do it.
Okay.
I'm computer here. Yeah. Curtis Sittenfeld, what?
It's a book about Laura Bush.
Yeah, a book about Laura Bush. Okay. But so that I was, you know.
American Wife.
I didn't think first was right.
Yeah, American Wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, so it's good she's giving the other party some equal fictional time.
Yeah, and I have not read American Wife, but my
daughter.
No, my daughter read it.
My head's got hit the ceiling. I'm sitting up so tall.
But my daughter read it.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Oh, I've enjoyed all the Curtis Sittenfeld novels I've read.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked Prep. I really liked her modern day telling of.
Oh, that was my favorite.
Yeah.
That was my. And, oh, my goodness. And we talked about that on.
Because remind me the name of that book.
Oh, my gosh.
My gosh. The Sense and Sense. No. The Pride and Prejudice
book that took place in Cincinnati, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Modern something?
Modern romance?
No.
Okay.
All right, here we go again. Yeah, I'm going to pull it up right here. And it was Eligible.
Eligible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was really
good. I thought that was probably my favorite of hers that I've read.
Yeah.
I liked it even more than Prep.
Yeah.
And in nonfiction, I don't know if I spoke about a book. I may have just talked about it before. For on the podcast, but it's there was a book called Lost Girls by Robert Kolker, Kolker, and it was again nonfiction to do with a number of women, young women, mostly either prostitutes or runaway, who disappeared out in the Long Island area.
Oh.
And the book was fascinating because it essentially, you know, talked about these disappearances, but also the fact that the families began to feel that because these women were kind of considered throwaway women, that the police, A, were not doing anything, and B, were, you know, when they did get clues, and they didn't really run them to ground. So he's got a new book coming out April 7th called Hidden Valley Road. Inside the Mind of an American Family.
I thought that sounded fascinating. It's about a family of 12, six of whom have schizophrenia schizophrenia because it was back in the
70s.
Okay.
And so scientists were like, oh, you know, wow, jackpot. Mm-hmm. Now we can learn, you know, so much about this, you know, just horrifying illness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the lead in sort of leads you to believe, and, you know, of course, here we are 50 years later, you know, not knowing a whole
no
lot
closer
more.
To right. helping people with that.
Right.
Yeah.
But Culker's a great writer. And I
oh, that's
think
good
this
to know.
One's...
So I looked that up on the library website, and you can
get the ebook.
But, oh my gosh,
you know,
we're following each other around on Google.
That's right. Yeah, I get so annoyed with our library. What we're talking about is sometimes you'll look at a book that's coming out, you know, just a couple of months in advance on our library system, and you'll see that you can get the ebook.
Uh-huh. Or in this case, I saw you could get the audiobook, but there's
no print book.
Yeah.
And you have to keep trying, which is sort of annoying. You know, I went in through the author thinking, okay, I'll go this way.
Right, because sometimes that does happen too. You can find it a different way.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So we love Multnomah County Library, but it does have its flaws.
We do.
So so hey, one thing I wanna mention is that I hope that everybody feels that this is a learning experience podcast, but also I want to say that for me it is as well, not just hearing you talk, but that you had recommended Fall and Rise on our summer one.
Yes.
And then I had mentioned also another book, and I was like, oh, I don't think I'll read it because that's so sad. And it was about a family that lost their child, and that you so a listener emailed, and she herself... their family had lost a child.
Yes.
And she said that it made her feel, it intensified the aloneness, the separated from society, hearing comments like that.
Right.
So I wrote her back with a very sincere apology for making her feel that way. And that so I ended up reading, largely because of her comment, reading Fall and Rise, which is about the Twin Towers and 9/11. And, you know, there is a place to sit with and be with sadness and to feel other people's pain. Yeah. And I really appreciated getting that email.
I know you passed it on to me, and I really appreciate it. And I think it also, she underlined something that I've heard other people talk about, which is, you know, sit with the sadness and also sort of recognize that just because somebody loses a child, a loved one, doesn't mean that you're never to speak of that again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think in this country, you know, we tend to not ever want to sort of talk about death, sadness, sickness, and it's a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really appreciated her writing in, and I think it made us both think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So so I hope some of these books, I'm thinking maybe, you know, maybe No Visible Bruises might make people think. And that sounds like it would be an uncomfortable book to read and, you know, really kind of get into that world, but an important place to be.
And yes. So. And fascinating. Very well done as well. Yeah.
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 So just always love talking books with you.
I know. I can't wait for the summer one.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to hear what listeners are reading and recommending too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and also hope that people maybe will want to spend more time with you because they will have an opportunity to do that in person.
That's right.
In October at our Run and Refresh retreat here in Portland. And Ellison, like Molly and like Alex, are all the Portland gang is going to be there, as well as obviously Dimiting and other AMR people. And so that you are going to lead a group to peruse and shop at Powell's City of Books, which I mentioned earlier. And so, you know, I envision you kind of giving a little book talk, maybe at the lobby of the hotel where we're staying, and then walking over. And because of the dates, the retreat now starts on a Friday and goes until Monday. So you will be going over on a weekday, so it'll be a little crowded, but, you know, maybe sharpen your elbows a little bit.
I think on a weekend. But I look forward to that. I look forward to showing everybody, you know, the different sections. Powell's, if you've never been, can be a bit of, it's on a city block,
multiple levels.
Yes.
And so each room has a color.
That's
And it's not just first floor, second floor, third floor. Oop. There seem to be like 7.5 floor, and, you know, all those things.
Yeah, it'll be a real experience. And I really like, you know, I hope I can hook people up with some good books that maybe they haven't been aware of before.
Yeah, exactly. So please consider joining us for that retreat in October here in Portland, Oregon. It's October October 23 to 26. We're going to be doing a half marathon over in Washougal, Washington. We're going to go to a different state to do the race. It's a costume optional race if people want to, because it's right before Halloween. So for more details on that, go to anothermotherrunner.com and click on the retreats link in our top navigation. There's a drop down, and there you'll find all the details and how to register. Our podcast today was produced in Portland, Oregon by Alex Ward, the owner of a new Kindle from Sounds Like Pictures. Many happy miles.